States Eventing Association's official podcast. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Chris Stafford. And as we begin our lead-up to this year's Alltech FEI World Equestrian Games in Normandy, Jimmy Wofford joins us to take a look back at the past World Equestrian Games and the American performances. Well, Jimmy, it's quite a look back in the rearview mirror that we've got today. How are you?
Never better, Chris. Thanks for having me on your program.
Well, this is an interesting look back in the rearview mirror, isn't it? Because we moved from the championship format that you were so familiar with of individual disciplines at different venues. What was your thoughts when this was all going to be put into one pot back there in the late 80s, it was decided?
Yes, in the late 80s, the FEI decided that they wanted to combine all of the world championships into one location, following the same idea, of course, as the Olympic Games. And the thought was that this would create media interest and spectator interest by combining all of them. I have to say, personally, I've always been a little bit put off by this format because two reasons. First of all, there are very, very few venues that can host this and make it work. I mean, you think of Aachen, you think of the Kentucky Horse Park. I know we're not supposed to look ahead, but the next WEG in 2018 has been awarded to Bromont, the site of the 1976 Olympic Games. You can see Bromont making it work, but a lot of these places have been near disasters because they were put on at the last moment. So that's one thing that worries me. The other thing that worries me is that the last consideration given by the FEI is always the eventing cross-country course. And so we don't necessarily have the best of ground and the best of conditions to build on. Having said that, these games now, they're a tradition, almost a quarter of a century. It was interesting. In 1990, the first WEG was in Stockholm, and they used the same stadium that was used in 1956 when the Equestrian Olympics were held there. And at one point during the two-week World Games, I went up and I sat where I had sat with my family in 1956 and watched a little bit of the proceedings. It was very interesting. And another historical note, because we're looking backwards today, Chris, that was the same stadium, almost exactly the same, where the 1912 Olympics were held. So that's a historical place, and that I thought that kicked off the World Games very well. The cross-country course was held literally in town, in Stockholm. The only other thing you can compare it to is as if you had the World Games in Central Park.
Or and Adelaide. Of course, Adelaide runs it through.
Adelaide, I missed it, so I will take your word for it. So that really lent quite a flavor to the event.
Yes, a very different complexion when you do that, because I think one of the points we should make is the legacy events of these major championships, whether it be the Olympic Games or the World Equestrian Games, but importantly, when you're combining all of these different disciplines, you would hope that there would be even stronger legacy for the equestrian community in that area.
One would hope, but there's mixed results on that, as we will see as we work our way through over the last 24 years now.
Well, let's start with the American results there. Bruce Davidson, he managed to get a bronze medal at the first World Equestrian Games. Of course, he has a history at World Championships, winning in 1978, of course, 1974, bringing the World Championships to Kentucky in 1978. So he kicked us off to a very good start in this new format with Pirate Lion winning the bronze medal.
Yes, Pirate Lion, but he did not have a team that was able to support him. We had Mike Huber, we had Mike Plum there, but their horses were not ready, and I thought at the time that our team showed the lack of of central coaching. We were trying to do this sort of on our own at this point. This was the post-Jack LaGoff era. And a lot of the riders were determined to go their own way. And these results show that. It was a very scattershot approach. Some of the horses were not fit, and some of them were technically unprepared for the requirements there. So we tried it for a few more years, and then after our experiences in 92, which are only 2 years later in Barcelona at the Olympics, that is when the USCT then swung back toward a central coach concept. And we'll talk about the results of that as we go along.
Yes, and to remind everybody of that team back there in Stockholm, it was Mike Huber with Pedigree Phoenix, his mother's horse. David O'Connor rode Wilton Fair. J. Michael Plobin was on Chagall. And Bruce, of course, rode Pirate Lion. That was the team when New Zealand, of course, won the gold. And Great Britain won the silver and Germany the bronze medal. That was the start of New Zealand really getting their teeth into this, wasn't it? With of course, Blythe Tate winning the first of his two world championship medals. Gold medals, I should say.
Yeah, well, individual gold medal.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And also, interestingly enough, I mean, by 1990, we were getting sort of accustomed to Mark Todd being involved in the top placings, as he certainly was here. But it's a little-known fact that he was living in England at this time and supporting his own efforts by producing and selling horses. And there were five other horses ridden by five other countries that he had produced, as well as his own ride, Balua, that were competing there at the World Games. And if ever anyone were going to be named the horseman of the century, you'd almost have to be for that stunt alone.
Much less
winning two individual gold Olympic medals.
extraordinary. We should mention also the British performance there, because we know we had the likes of Ian Stark and Ginny Lang on the teams there consistently, and Karen Straker, of course. They were regular members of the British team. So not surprising that they would come in into the silver medal position there at the World Championships.
Yes, I think the Kiwis just caught them napping a little bit. And it was a very good competition, and it was quite a stiff cross-country course. We have to make the point that up until 2002, we were competing in the classic format. So when we talk about scores and when we talk about people doing things, we have to remember that from 1990 until 2002, which we'll get to, these were all classic formats, the dressage, then the roads and tracks, steeplechase, roads and tracks, cross country. Usually the test was about 18 miles. At that period, they did not tend to use the maximum distance of 22 miles. So these were serious competitions, and the cross-country course rides differently if your horse is fresh than if your horse has had 15 miles of exercise beforehand. And that, I mean, looking back through there, the one horse that struck me was Murphy himself, because he looked as if he could gallop forever.
Well, he could, and he was a very, very strong horse, of course, but he suffered from the heat in Stockholm, as I recall, and it was the beginning of our learning process or scientific evaluation as to how to deal with the combination of high heat and humidity, as we will learn as we got to Atlanta, if you remember, because the International League of the Protection of Horses and the FEI then combined, didn't they, prior to Atlanta, to do a study on this. But I think they were still in the early days of learning how quickly they had to cool down a horse in those conditions.
Yes, and that is when Patty Mayhew and her team invented the misting fans and these advanced cooling techniques that we use now, because it was, as you say, a warm day in Stockholm on cross-country day. And some of the horses did suffer. That probably is the only time that Murphy himself ever had cross-country time faults.
Yes, quite. Yes, he was always a double handful, that horse. Well, we should just conclude the results from the American results from that event at Stockholm. Mike Huber finished in 18th place, Mike Plum in 24th, and David O'Connor in 35th individually. And the team just missed out on the medals in 4th place. And then we went to Hague, the Hague in the Netherlands. Jimmy, this was the start of a little bit of rumbling in the foundations of the structure of the World Equestrian Games, because there was financial issues, obviously. It was, as you said, a huge undertaking to host all of these disciplines in one location. So I think they were having teething troubles, weren't they? And there was concern where it would actually finish up, because France said no, and then I believe that Dublin said no. And in the end, it went to The Hague, which had very little time to prepare.
Yes, yes, and it showed. I mean, all the riders and the administrative staff that were involved in that process still just rolled their eyes. The bus shuttle system did not work to get the athletes back and forth from their lodging to the stables. The horse transport system to get the horses out to the cross-country test was a mess. It just showed the amount of planning and preparation that goes into something like this, which is five times as complicated as running the event at Rolex every year, and that's complicated enough.
Yes.
So the cross-country course, the footing was inconsistent, and that caused us some problems. That cost us really two medals. And it confirmed my belief that this was a shaky format because of the size of the organizing committee that it takes to put it on. You and I are focusing naturally on the eventing, but don't forget there is at the same time dressage, there is driving, endurance, vaulting, and then toward the end of the second week, show jumping.
Yes.
So you have a six-ring circus going on.
You do. And then, of course, they brought in reining at the 2002
yes.
Games, as I recall. Now, our team in The Hague, again, we were in the medals individually because Dorothy Trapp with Molokai won the silver medal, went one better than Bruce and won the silver. The team comprised of Karen and David O'Connor. Karen was on Biko, David on a mission. And there was Mike Huber on another horse, he rode Hoopy there, and Jim Graham with Easter Parade, and Bruce Davidson with Eagle Lion. Now, their results were Karen 11th individually, Mike 31st, David O'Connor 44th, Jim and Bruce eliminated. It was a tough competition for them. As you say, the footing was very challenging. It was on a military base, wasn't it, some miles out of The Hague, and it was an incredibly hot day. I remember the media, the satellite media office out there, Jim, they had to take the walls down. The heat was so bad in there. They had those temporary walls, of course, and we literally had to take the walls out. It was so hot in there during cross country.
I remember hearing about that. This is one of the World Games that I did not go to. But all of the reports, it was not a happy time, even despite Dorothy's outstanding results. And I haven't looked at the scores for years. I went back and looked at the scores getting ready for this conversation, and it reminded me how heartbreakingly close she was to winning the whole thing. She had 2.4 time on the steeplechase with Molokai, obviously having been told, Dorothy, this is your first international team competition, you know, don't take it easy, it's hot, look out for your horse. And she was, 3 seconds slow on the steeplechase, and it cost her the individual gold medal.
It did, yes. Yes, I'm going to talk to Dorothy about that on another show, because I'm sure she will have very clear memories of how that. Then that was on the steeplechase that she accrued those time faults.
one of the fastest horses across country we have ever seen, losing one place in the ordinals because he's slow on the steeplechase. I mean, it's so ironic. But that's the sport.
Yes, it really is. But that was the sport, as you say, in those days. You had so many options to get it right or wrong.
Yes, I remember Mike Plum once scratching his head and saying, you know, there are over 75 ways to be eliminated at a competition, and I think I've just found out the 75th, because he had been eliminated for some minor infraction, but that was the rules. And all of us sort of had heard about that rule, but we had never seen it in operation.
Well, again, the Kiwis won the individual gold there, as you say. Vaughan Jeffries with Bounce, a combination that really was to stand out at that time. They came back and won. And then, of course, Great Britain beat them actually right out of the medals. They didn't even get into the medal contention because Great Britain took over that where they had been for so long, I think, in the history of the sport, and that was Karen Dixon, Mary Thompson, as she was then, Mary King, Charlotte Bathe, and Christina Gifford, as she was then, winning the gold medal and beating France and then Germany. Interestingly, the Brits had four on their team, and France and Germany had three on their team.
Yes, yes. It's also interesting to note that Great Britain had a new crop of stars coming up, because this is the first time that Mary Thompson King had ridden in world championship or Olympic teams, and I think the first time that Christina Gifford had ridden for the team in the Olympics and world championships. Both of them had the Europeans,
of course, yes.
But, you know, the world championships and the Olympics, that's a very definite step forward. And here, 20 years later, we will still be talking about Mary King and Christina Gifford, you know, trying out for the team this summer.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah, yeah. Well, we did pretty well. We came away with an individual medal, but still that elusive team gold medal. And we had to go on to Rome to only be beaten into fourth place again when we went to Rome to Pratone del Vivaro, which is, of course, a favourite venue for eventers in Europe, a lovely venue. Did you actually attend that one, Jimmy?
I did not attend that one, but I attended it in 1960 when the Olympics were held there. So I know the ground, I know the conditions, yes.
Yes, wonderful conditions there, and a great event altogether. Now, our team, again, David and Karen were back on the team. They were stalwarts of the team at that time. David was riding Gilt Edge into sixth place. Karen rode Prince Panache, and Bruce again was on the team with Heyday, who finished 21st. Kerry Milligan with Out and About finished 15th, and Abigail Lufkin with Quest was on the team there and finished 37th. But again, we missed out on that team medal again, just finishing in fourth place. But that was a wonderful event too. I think that was, of course, another very happy event for the Kiwis, because Blythe came back and won the gold, just beating Toddy again there. And I think that a lot of people there, and me included, was hoping that Toddy would get onto the top of the podium, but he was thwarted yet again at the World Championships.
Yes, and you have to say, during that time, when you had a team with Mark Todd, Blythe Tate, and usually Andrew Nicholson, you just shuddered at the thought of having to go up against them, especially in a classic format, because they're all such genius horsemen that you knew their horses were going to be sound and fit. I mean, it really, really made you bear down, knowing the level of competition that you were going to face.
Right. So we came away from Rome knowing we were going to go to Spain four years later for the event in Jerez de la Frontera. Did you manage to get to that one?
Yes, I was there. I was coaching the Canadians at that WEG. And again, the last of the classic format world championships, very hot conditions, hard ground, and Michael Tucker, the course designer, had really built an old-fashioned track. I mean, this was a Frank Weldon badminton sort of track. It took a lot of jumping. It took a lot of galloping. There were very, very few horses that made the time. I'm not sure there were only two or three horses that made the time at all cross country, because everyone was riding, you know, with their foot on the brake a little bit just to make sure that they got home.
Yes, as you say, it was very hot out there. It was very open country, wasn't it? There really wasn't much shade. And it was quite far south. You know, we were just off the coast there, so it was extremely hot conditions again. We did get ourselves back in the record books there. A fantastic performance by the American team there to win the gold medal.
Yes, and a disappointing result for John Williams, because he had a real shot at an individual medal, and his horse was just a little bit tired on Sunday and didn't jump clean. Or we might have had a handful of medals coming out of there.
Absolutely. Well, just to remind everybody of that team, there was Amy Tryon with Poggio, and she won the individual bronze. Kim Severson with Winsome Adante, just beginning to make a mark on his career, finished in 17th place. Will Fordre, I'm a bit ahead of myself, aren't I? I'm going on to Arken already. I should get back to Jerez. John Williams, as you said, with Carrick. He finished fourth individually, and he was a member of the team. Kim Stevenson with Winsome Adante, of course. He was in sixth place. Amy was on that team with Poggio, and David O'Connor with Gilt Edge finished 10th. And as you say, it really was memorable that the Americans finally made their mark in the World Championship format. The World Equestrian Games format. That was the first time we got the team onto a podium, hadn't it?
Right, since 78.
Right, since 78. So that was memorable, but memorable in many ways. Did you come away with any lasting impressions of the event in itself and the games in total at the Jerez de la Frontera?
Well, it was bittersweet because we knew by that time that the Olympic Games in Athens 2 years later would be the first Olympic Games held under the short format, and we could not see all of the problems and changes coming, but we knew that they were coming towards us. So that was a period of real uncertainty in the sport. No one really knew what sort of horses to pick for it. No one really knew how to condition for it. Certainly none of us could anticipate that the horrifying string of rotational fatalities that we would see over the next 5 years. But going away, we knew that was the last of an era. When the last horse galloped across the finish line, then that was the last classic format that would ever be held at that level.
Yes, memorable for that, if nothing else. And then we went on to Aachen 4 years later with obviously very high hopes, having, you know, been on top of the medal podium with the team in Spain. And that was a slightly similar team, as I mentioned earlier. Amy Tryon was with Poggio again, and Kim with Winsome Adante. Will Fordre joined the team with Antigua. Karen was there with Little Woody, Upstage, as she called him, and Heidi White with Northern Spy. Now, individually, they didn't finish in the top 10, apart from Amy, and they just missed the medal again. Were you in Aachen?
Yes, I was doing the television there, so I had the best seat in the house, by far. And I had high hopes for the American team before that. We had been looking good. Mark Phillips was the full-time coach, and he had sort of settled in. He'd had 10 years now with us by this time. And I really felt like, given the people that we had, with Karen's dressage skills, with Kim Severson's dressage skills, with Amy, who did a wonderful job with Poggio with a difficult horse, three very, very solid scores that you can anticipate. And then we had new riders on the team who had been going very well, and that, in my mind, that's the sort of mix that you want to bring to any upper level championship or Olympics is you would like to have a mix. And I thought we had it, and I was wrong again.
Now, that course was designed by Rüdiger Schwarz, the German designer. Were you familiar with his tracks, and what were your impressions of that course?
I was not familiar with this track, and with his, you know, course design, I had heard about it, of course, from Mark and others. And what struck me was the increasing technicality, the intensity of the questions that were being asked of the horses. I mean, the horses, to go the fast route, they were having to jump across 90-degree corners almost parallel to the front face of it. And they were doing it. They were doing it very well. I think another thing, we started in 2000, and so by 2006, in 2004 we started. So by 2006, we had started learning how to warm horses up for this. I was talking about, we hadn't seen the changes coming. The first year or so, some riders were continuing to do their own roads and tracks and steeplechase with their horses to prepare them. And by the time we got to Aachen, people had pretty much settled down. I mean, the horses need some cantering and they need some jumping, but they don't need some intensive workout program. And we had pretty much cracked that code by that time. So as I say, I was in a very, very good mood at the start of the competition, and really, really disappointed that it did not turn out as well as I had hoped it would.
Well, the Brits won the individual medal there. Zara Phillips with Toy Town, and Clayton Fredericks won the silver with Been a Long Time, and then came Amy. And in the team competition, Germany, Great Britain, and Australia. And then, as I say, we were just outside the medals in fourth place there. So by then already, we knew that we were going to bring the World Equestrian Games to North America. What were your thoughts on that decision then, and the possibility of it coming to an American venue, one that obviously is well set up for major competitions, but this is a big piece of cake to take a bite into, isn't it?
Yes, it was, and the horse park is one of the few venues around that I think can put on the WEG correctly as it's currently constructed, to have all of the FEI disciplines on the grounds more or less at the same time. And so the big question was, could the organizing committee get their head around not just putting on the Rolex event, not just putting on a show jumping class in the stadium, but the complexity of having different venues competing at the same time?
Yes, a huge undertaking. Quite the juggling act, because by now, of course, you've got the reining going on in the indoor arena. We've got the endurance. We just had the full Monty by now, didn't we?
Yes, and there behind the scenes, there was a lot of juggling going on, and even at the start of the two-week period, that there were a lot of last-minute adjustments being made on the fly, but they pulled it off.
They certainly did. And just to remind everybody who was on that team, I know it's only just a few years ago, but Boyd Martin made the team there with Neville Bardas, and he finished 10th individually. Philip Dutton was riding Woodburn, and he finished 18th. Karen O'Connor was on the team yet again with Mandiba and finished 19th. And Buck Davidson made his debut on the World Games team with Ballino Castle RM and finished 42nd. The medals went to Great Britain, then Canada, and then New Zealand. Now, these performances, the team again just missed out on the medals in fourth place, but these performances, Jimmy, are very fresh in our minds and speak to the very modern day dress eventing.
Yes, I thought that Mike Etherington-Smith had been building with this course in mind for 2 or 3 years. And he really produced, I thought, a marvelous result. Not an easy course, but not a punishing course. And I think the riders that were there would all agree with that if you did not go well on the day, it really was not the fault of the course, that it was something had gone wrong in your preparation. You did not have a good day. Your horse did not have a good day. But the course itself, I thought, was really the high water mark of that sort of design. And by that sort of design, Chris, I mean the ultimate accuracy that was required. I started at that time, and I do it all the time now. I total up the total number of jumping efforts, and then I identify the jumping efforts that require accuracy. Either it's a narrow, it's a chevron, it's a corner, something must be approached on an extreme angle. And I develop a ratio so that a course that is a 50% course means that every other jump you have to be accurate. Well, that's a very unusual number. You don't usually get that number. But Mikey S. Smith, Mikey S. was, his course was about a 62. And that means 2 out of 3 jumps required not just jumping, but skillful approach also. And I think that it's easy to get that sort of thing wrong. And we have seen that in other competitions at other times. Just by comparison, we're not going to look ahead today, but Derek DeGrazia's courses usually run in the 45% range, 45 to 48% range. And they seem technical enough, but the courses by 2010 were getting ultra technical. And I think it was after that we have seen the change in course design.
Well, having been very familiar with his courses, obviously building Rolex for a number of years, Jimmy, was that what you were expecting of Mike for the World Equestrian Games?
Totally. Totally.
So no surprises there. And in terms of the overall performances, then if you look at the total event, what was your takeaway from those performances and how they handle that kind of track?
Well, overall, my not surprise, but one takeaway for me was how good these people were getting technically. That was the first thing. They were starting to produce really acceptable dressage. They weren't just going around with the horses' neck pulled in. Their horses were starting to move. And secondly, I saw the individual winner, and I said, where did we get this kid? I had seen his name in the lists before, but Michael Young was a total surprise to me. And I'm now one of his biggest fans, but I was very, very surprised. Not that he won it, because by the time he got halfway around the show jumping course, you said, okay, this kid is the real deal in all three phases. And I think that it might be for another program, but in the cavalry era before World War II, most of those people competed in at least 2 of the Olympic disciplines. That was not unusual. And an American rider in 1948 won medals in 2 disciplines. And then that went out of fashion a little bit until Mark Todd came along. And Mark Todd, people forget that Mark Todd won 2 individual gold medals, 84 and 88, but he also was on the show jumping team.
In Seoul.
In 1988, on a horse that some of the show jumpers say they didn't want to ride because it was so difficult and it wasn't a clean jumper. And Toddy was like 12th or 14th in the Olympics show jumping.
Yes.
And so now people are they're figuring this out. You know, Ingrid Klimke and Michael Young are riding Grand Prix dressage. And many of our jumpers now are starting to show in pretty good-sized jumper classes. Well, this is a return to the overall horseman ideal of the 20s and 30s and 40s, that these people really now are masters of the horse in every phase. And so I was very, very, I was very impressed by that. I was extremely impressed by Michael Young. And I thought, you know, the Germans had a little bit of bad luck there, but they gave us fair warning about what they're going to look like over the next 8 years or so.
Well, I know this is for another show, but I'd love to get your thoughts as we move forward then, taking what we've learned from previous World Equestrian Games and going forward in this format. As you say, we go to Normandy in just a few weeks. Will you be there?
I don't plan to go there, no.
So you'll be watching at a distance, but I'm sure doing the statistics that you normally do, so we'll have a full evaluation, Jimmy, afterwards.
I look forward to it, Chris.
All right, and then, of course, in 4 years' time, you'll just be going back north of the border to Bromont. And were you there in 76?
No, I went to the mini Olympics in 1975. I competed there. I didn't make the team in 76. Obviously, I've gone back, you know, on a regular basis now that they hold the two-star and three-star there.
Right. Well, we could reminisce about 1975 another time when, of course, Ginny Holgate, as she was then, came over with that very little unknown Jason and beat everybody. She came as an individual, and Richard Mead was the chef to keep, and she beat the pants off everybody, if you remember.
Oh, I remember.
Well, as you say, we could reminisce for a whole lot longer, but I think for now we've put the World Equestrian Games into perspective as we look forward to this year's event in Normandy, France. Jimmy, I want to thank you very much indeed for coming on the program and giving us your thoughts.
Thank you again, Chris.
And I'll be speaking to some of the medalists of those past World Equestrian Games in future episodes. And remember, these podcasts can be downloaded on iTunes. So until the next time, enjoy your eventing.